Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode of the show is Jock Bartley. Jock Bartley is a founding member of the band Firefall, which came together back in 1974 in Boulder, Colorado. Bartley is the sole remaining member from the original lineup, and he is at the helm on a new covers collection from that band, Friends and Family 2, which came out on May 23rd of 2025. In this conversation, we discuss a little bit about Bartley's origins in Hutchinson, Kansas. Also talked about the early days of Firefall, what it was like touring with Fleetwood Mac, and his hopes for Firefall's future. That's Jock Bartley of Firefall, coming up on Into Music now. So let's see if I remember. You have a history with Hutchinson, Kansas, yeah?
Born and raised there. And when I saw the interview today with Wichita, Kansas, I went, oh my God, Wichita. Yeah, I was born in Hutchinson and lived out near Nickerson and moved to Colorado when I was about 9 and a half. Which, two things. I'm really glad I had that rural Kansas upbringing, because that's really great, as opposed to, for instance, no offense to any Jersey guy, but New Jersey, if you grow up in New Jersey, you got a kind of different outlook on life, you know? And, you know, the other thing, it was just, I moved to Colorado and showed an interest in guitar, and my mom found me a world famous jazz guitar player, Johnny Smith, who had like 14 jazz albums out. And he just started a music store and teaching clinic. And I was one of his first students on guitar. And it's like, that's one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Have you ever been able to come back? And do you have like any family still in Kansas? Or
I do have some cousins. My side of the family, nobody's in Kansas anymore. But, you know, Hutchinson, I remember the big city of Hutchinson. And Firefall played there once we played in Hutchinson, maybe 5 or 8 years ago or something. And it was like, there were two or three stoplights. And it was like, this is not the big burg I remember. But you know what? Again, the rural upbringing, you know, was really great. And then when I came out and started being a guitar player and I'm an artist and really outgoing with my creativity. So, yeah, man. How's things in Wichita these days?
We're doing well. We've got our nice weather is going to stay. We're supposed to be in the 70s through next week. And
I'll tell you what, springtime in the Rockies, for the last month, probably 25 days were 60 degrees or over, you know, at the end of winter in Colorado. Now, of course, the ski areas have 180 inches of snow, you know, going into the final days of springtime and stuff. But Colorado's really great. And I'll tell you what, I loved having it. Freaked out all my trees and my plants. They thought it was springtime in, you know, in early February.
We can dive into the record, but I want to ask you about this jazz thing. So you start taking lessons from a jazz guy, but wound up playing rock music. Was that because of the Beatles?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. 10 million, you know, kids around the country, you know, after Ed Sullivan's show and the Beatles suddenly wanted to be in a band and grow their hair long and all that. And the cool thing for me was in 1964, I'd already played guitar for like 4 or 5 years. And so I got in a band pretty quick after that, and when I was 13 or 14. But, you know, a lot of it, I've been really fortunate and lucky with my timing and being ready. You know, when I, you know, I've had a couple of big breaks in my career, you know, and one of them was when out of the blue, I got hired to be the guitar player for Gram Parsons, Emmylou Harris, and the Fallen Angels for about a month and a half. Even though I wasn't a country guy like James Burton, the you know, the licks I was trying to play. But, you know, yeah, Firefall was really a magical thing in the early days, really fated, you know, meant to be. I met Rick Roberts in New York City when I was playing with Gram Parsons and Emmylou Harris. And Rick, of course, replaced Gram Parsons in the Flying Breeder Brothers with Chris Hillman. You live in Boulder, I live in Boulder, you know, we should get together sometime. We got together a you know, many months later, I ran into him and I went, man, we should get together. And Rick was thinking he was going to be putting out his third solo record in a couple of years. And I was going to be his guitar player. And then all of a sudden, Mark Andes from Spirit and JoJo Gunn, who just moved into Boulder, the mountains above Boulder, started playing with us. And suddenly it felt like a band. And Rick, in the middle of our getting together, said, I know this guy, Larry Burnett, in Washington, D.C., who writes songs and sings great. You want to hear a song? And Mark and I go, yeah, sure. First song we hear of Larry's was Cinderella. We said, get him out here. And as the story goes, but it was a very fortunate, fated thing. Mark Andes and I were the two players in the band. Soon came Michael Clark from the drums, from the Birds and the Flying Breeder Brothers and stuff. But that first week of practice, when Larry came out, we had 20 or 25 original songs to play. And Mark and I were just going, wow, you got another one? And Rick would go, yeah, how about this one? You know, and those 20 or 25 songs in the first week we encountered together with Larry, Rick and Larry, the two singer-songwriters, a lot of them were good enough to make the first record a year and a half later. Mexico, we learned, and Living Ain't Living, and Cinderella, and it was like, oh my God. You know, so we had our sights set high, not only because we had guys like Michael from the Birds and Mark from Spirit, who had a lot of success in the music business before Firefall, but we had the songs, and the songs were the main thing in my mind. Songs number one, and then you look at the Eagles or Little River Band or bands, you know, Dan Fogelberg, it's the songs, baby. And then the singer that sings the songs, and then third comes the musical treatment, including lead guitars or flutes or whatever, that you give the song. But the main thing is the song, and Firefall had those from our first week of practice.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. You know, really unheard of, because when you're starting a band, and believe me, I've started a lot of bands in my life from about high school on, junior high on, you know, you don't know what you're going to sound like. What songs are we going to play? And to have 20 songs of that, many of which would end up on those gold records that you see behind me as I'm moving around here too much. Unbelievable. And as a guitar player, lead guitar player, just waiting for songs to play on. Thank you very much.
Well, that's interesting too, because I mean, you might have encountered this because sometimes too, right, you can get a group of good players together, and they might even be good writers, but there just isn't something that gels. It's like you can have great writers, great players, but it just doesn't fit, you know?
Right. Or the recorded treatment of those great writers and bands' songs, that the record wasn't that great. Maybe their producer didn't really know how to get the great sounds to have a hit record, you know, because, you know, you're right. There's so many factors at that point when, okay, we're making a record, let's see what happens. And probably 80, 90% of the time, nothing happens. How many bands just didn't hit it at the right times, or didn't have really good songs, or something was off in the magic. And, you know, I have to say that the magic was happening for the first few years of Firefall with all those songs. And us, I mean, we sounded like Firefall from the first song we worked out that first week, because it was the guys in the band and those singers on those songs. And I've told Rick Roberts, you know, thank you very much. You know, I was born as a lead guitar player. I was born to play on Mexico. Just that's right up my wheelhouse. And that's one of the things that was so great about Firefall. Each guy filled the position really well.
You guys were also starting off in Colorado, but Colorado, like at that time, was like, there was a lot going on there musically.
No shit.
Yeah.
It was amazing because, I mean, a lot of people know about the story of the Eagles guys or, you know, moving to L.A. and starting the Southern California brand of rock and roll, which took over the world, right? But not too many people know about that a high number of those L.A. rock stars got tired of going back to L.A. and decided to move to the mountains above Boulder, Colorado. And suddenly, you know, in the first few weeks of Firefall, you know, our first gig at the Good Earth, you know, when we were just figuring stuff out, Stephen Stills would come and play with us, or Dan Fogelberg would walk in, you know, and it'd be like, you know, Boulder was really a musical center for about maybe 5 or 7 years, and then it moved to Austin, Texas, or somewhere else. Seattle, hey.
Yeah. It's funny how that happens, though. It's just like, it is often that kind of like moment in time, and then and then things change.
And then things change. And, you know, and a lot of the, like you said, and you, very good point, you know, there's a lot of bands that have what people think are really great songs and a really good sound and make an album that does nothing. And, you know, and Firefall was lucky in a couple of respects, but the main thing was that we made such a great first record. 25 songs that first week, and you know, to have a, you know, that is our best album, which of course was our first album, the one with the comet on the front. And you know, couldn't have been better timing or a better record at that time, you know. And suddenly in 1976, then we started playing with Fleetwood Mac during the White Album before Rumors, and then we played with Rumors on their tour, or the Doobie Brothers, or Loggins and Messina. You know, we got to know Kenny Loggins when he was in Loggins and Messina, and then suddenly we're opening for Kenny Loggins, the solo artist, you know. So perfect timing, great songs, you know. Thank you, baby. I'm a fortunate guy, and I still get to do it. Hey,
with this new record and the previous one, you're celebrating a lot of that music. And the thing about, I think, that time and why so many people, you know, still kind of gravitate toward music of the 70s and 60s is that all those bands had different sounds. I mean, Fleetwood Mac didn't sound like Kenny Loggins, and Doobie Brothers didn't sound like Little
right.
Feet.
The truth is in the late 60s and the 70s, that decade will never happen again. The number of quality bands with quality songs and radio friendly and everything. And the reason is for that, I think, primarily, now it came from the 50s and Buddy Holly and Elvis and stuff, but record labels in the 70s, 60s and 70s, if you had songs and they sounded good, they'd put your record out. Now, whether they pushed it or not, or it became a big success or not, you know, that was left up to the fates of the time and stuff. But record labels kept their hands off creativity wise, and they'd let a band like Loggins and Messina sound like that, and the Fleetwood Mac, oh great, it's perfect, you know. I know they used to be a blues band, but listen to that record, you know. Fleetwood Mac was the, probably the best summer we ever had playing with them on Rumors, opening shows for them on Rumors in stadiums across the country, you know. But what changed is in the 80s, record labels started saying, you know, we don't hear a single, or else here, we'd like you to do these two songs, which we think you guys would be great at. Or, like in Firefall's case, suddenly having a guy from Atlantic Records in the room with us when we were figuring out the songs for the second or third record. It's like, wait a minute. That's not going to fly. You know, you be the record label and we'll be the artist. And, you know, you either have the songs and you have the magic and you have a hit, or you have the songs and you don't have the magic and you don't hit, or you don't have the songs and nothing happens. I mean, there's all kinds of shit that can happen.
I think one of my favorite stories about the 60s record industry was Frank Zappa was talking about how the Mothers of Invention got signed, and they were playing like the Whiskey a Go-Go, and they're playing their like a big boogie number, and Tom Wilson, who produced their first album, came in. He saw kids having fun, and he was like, oh, these guys need a record deal. And then he gets them in the studio, and he realizes, oh, they're not just like a boogie rock.
Oh, that one song wasn't totally representative.
Yeah. But just the idea, like, oh, well, the kids seem to dig it. We could probably make some money on this, you know?
Yeah, and that's what it's about, is record labels are, you know, whatever, thinking we can make some serious money on this. And, you know, most bands... Now, back in the days, if you had a You Are the Woman in the top 10 for a long time, Rick Roberts and his publisher made a ton of money. You really can't make money at songwriting and publishing anymore unless you get in a movie or TV, because, you know, so many, not only songwriters, singer-songwriters, but bands with singer-songwriters, you know, got screwed, totally screwed by record labels and didn't make any money. You know, the record label made money, or, hey, the publisher got the money. But, you know, I guess I had a hit song and I didn't make any money. You know, it's like that happened way too often because it was all about money and power, and record labels had the power. But boy, in the 70s, you could, if you had songs that sounded good that were original, yeehaw, let's go.
I want to ask you about that, about, you know, the changes that have taken place and like, music's, I think, probably always been hard to make a living in, but now, you know, like you were saying, publishing is different, record deals are different, touring's different. You've probably had to try to figure out the industry not once, but probably five or six times, right?
You know, that's a good point. And the truth is, because I worked really hard at it with my teacher, Johnny Smith, and he drilled into me not only a melodic nature of playing, but also the technique and the precision. I mean, when you're going to play this one lick that's difficult, you have to have the precision to pull that off. I had all that, and then suddenly got, you know, was in Boulder, Colorado, which was, you know, just so great. And you know, Stephen Stills and Dan Fogelberg and all the people that moved in to an already happening music scene of original bands of all kinds of stuff, you know, and Firefall became one of them. But because of Rick Roberts, and of course, Michael Clark, who is the drummer for the Byrds, but Rick, as a songwriter, knew exactly where he wanted to try to go with whatever band that he had going. And that was, let's put out really good records that people sing along to and request at radio stations aimed at women. You know, he wanted to make a big mark and make a lot of money. And he did. And Firefall hit it because we had great songs.
When you were touring with Fleetwood Mac and opening for them, how much did you watch Lindsey Buckingham play?
A lot. I more listened to Lindsey's playing on Fleetwood Mac albums, on those songs. You know, back then, you know, they were the best band in the world. You know, the combination of when Lindsey and Stevie joined Christine and the Mac Boys, unbelievable. That, I mean, Rumors has to be in the top four or five records ever made. God. But it was interesting because I watched them mostly every night, you know, and I kicked myself for not having even a little Instamatic camera with me. Because, you know, I had the all access pass. And a lot of times I'd go between the crowd and the stage, looking up at them 10 feet away from me right there on the stage. And them as a band, Lindsey was the great guy for that band as a guitar player. And he had such a distinctive style playing without a pick and the parts that he came up with. But I mean, how could you not just be odd with Stevie Nicks and Christine Perfect? It's like, wow. So it was so great. And I learned a lot about that, but mostly as a spectator and fan, total fan of Fleetwood Mac, how could you not be backstage and see the band up close when they were playing, not be in awe? I mean, it was just like, wow, what a combination.
As a guitar player, he just kind of fascinates me because he's, you know, I mean, you talked about having a jazz background, and he doesn't really have like a rock thing. He plays in a rock band, but his guitar playing is not like, it's not like it comes from Chuck Berry or something, you know?
Well, that's true. He has his own distinctive style, and, you know, each lead guitar player's style is a combination of two or three dozen factors, whether they took any lessons, what kind of guitar and amp they played. Because a guy that who's great, great, great on a Telecaster may not be so great burning with a Les Paul, you know, or Paul Reed Smith and stuff. We're all different, and that's the great thing. And what I have to say is that a lead guitar player who's really good but knows what he's doing, the only thing that matters is making what you're going to play on this song, making the song better. It ain't about your licks that you play or, hey, look at how fast I can play. You know, it's like, no, what you play has to be to improving and putting the icing on this musical cake. And that's what us lead guitar players do. And there's a lot of us around, although it's interesting to me because not many bands of 2025 have lead guitar players that really do play any leads and stuff. But also it's changed so much that there's not a lot of us left. But I'll tell you what, the fertile ground is listening to those records from the 70s.
If you're home from tour, do you still pick up the guitar every day and play a little bit?
No. Now, first of all, we don't really tour like we used to. Touring used to be in the heyday, God, 3-4 weeks gone, 5 days at home, 2 more weeks on. You know, that's the only thing you could do. I couldn't have any plants or a dog in my house because I was never home. We were kind of weekend warriors, and this year's a lot sparser than normal, which I got to tell you, as a 70-year-old guy, that's not a problem with me.
My introduction to Firefall was through the Alan album, which my older brother had. What memories do you have of making that record?
Our third record was interesting, and it ended up being our biggest seller for a long time, quickly going platinum 3 months after it got put out. I think that was actually our record company going, we promised them platinum. Put it out, it's platinum. Did we actually sell a million copies by that time? Oh, probably not. But it was going great. It was different because Elan, our third album, was done in two stages. The first stage was with producer extraordinaire Tom Dowd at Criterion Miami. He did everybody from the Allman Brothers to Aretha. And we kind of just turned our record over to him. Here's the songs. What do you want to do, Tom? And he really visualized a kind of softer, more acoustic Firefall. After being in the studio with him for 3 or 4 weeks, and the album that was mixed and we listened to, it sounded soft. And it sounded like there were a couple of songs that maybe could have been better songs. And that was the first time in Firefall for us, the band members, that said, this may not be good enough. Atlantic Records and Ahmet Erdogan agreed. And they said, go back in the studio and Rick, write a few more songs. And yeah, if you want to add drums, add some drums. You know, and Ahmet Erdogan gave us permission. So we went in, but it wasn't with Tom Dowd anymore. It was with Ron and Howard Albert, who, you know, with Crosby, Stills, and Nash fame and, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff. And Rick did write a couple other new songs, and we went in and added drums Like on Jim Keltner played drums on one song, and we beefed it up and we added the string section to Strange Way. That's just dun dun strange way to tell me you love, you know, the strings. And boy, we added drums to that damn record. But we made a much better record. And it was just interesting because the great Tom Dowd just had a different vision of our third record. And we came in and made more of a rock record. And to end with on that, I'll just say, you know, I've been fighting for since the early 70s because of You Are the Woman, Just Remember I Love You. People think we're, a lot of people think we're a soft rock band. Hey, they're soft rock. You Are the Woman. We were actually a real going rock band from Boulder, Colorado that had some great ballads with Rick Roberts, you know, writing songs deliberately to have girls call radio stations on. That was a part of what Firefall was, along with Larry Burnett's songs, who were this, this purging of Larry's songwriting soul. You know, it was great having all those songs to choose from. But yeah, it, you know, it's been a long ride and it's still going. And man, it's amazing after all this time to still be making new records. And I'll end with that. After putting out for the first time in Firefall's long history, two albums of other people's songs, I'm determined to put out a 5 or 6 or 7 song EP of new Firefall songs, or maybe a full album. But actually we have a couple, one or two that are fairly done. You know, I'm writing and I'm encouraging the guys in the band to, if you got any, even music without lyrics, let's, we're making a new Firefall record of Firefall songs too. So can't believe I'm still doing this, and it's a lot of fun.
You've been listening to a conversation with Jock Bartley of Firefall. The band's new album, Friends and Family 2, came out May 23rd of this year. Firefall will be on the road in 2025. You can find new concert dates and more information about the band in general at the website officialfirefall.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station at our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org, and we will see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.